Today's Thursday, March 10th, 2005. We've just taken about a 45-minute break, and we will now be resuming the interview with Mr. Norman Reed. Mr. Reed, when we signed off earlier, we were discussing your debriefing. I was wondering, aside from the debriefing and the medical treatment that you were given, was there any counseling at all, like thinking about the situation, the present situation, now that we know about things like post-traumatic stress syndrome? Was there any attention given to that at all during or following your debriefing?
No, none whatsoever.
Looking back at the situation now, do you feel that perhaps you would have benefited from some type of stress counseling?
Well, you have brought up a very interesting and important question. And that has come out particularly as I have been producing these films of my fellow aircrew members. And several of them have reported that in retrospect, there were great changes in their lifestyle as a result of the experiences that they had. Art Kinnis, for one, mentions this. Jim Lang, who was flying a mosquito and shot down.
Okay, we're back on.
All right.
We were talking about Mr. Arkinis.
And several others have reported dramatic changes in their lifestyles as a result of what they went through on these night combat raids. Jim Lang, maybe I shouldn't speak on behalf of others, and maybe you should not put their names in as from me, but others have reported having nightmares.
Right.
They wake up in the middle of the night and they're struggling with the bedclothes, trying to get out of an airplane.
Right.
And I had nightmares of trying to get out of a burning bomber, and also this is an interesting side that probably doesn't come out too much, but you know, were we afraid? You're damn right we were afraid. At least I know I was, and I think everybody who answers the question honestly would say they were. But there was another fear, and the other fear seemed to transcend that one of personal injury or death. And that one, it was, as a member of a crew, you were a team who had worked together, developed methods together, and so on, and you were afraid that you were going to fail in doing the part that you were being counted upon to contribute to the success, safety, and survival of the crew.
That training as a crew, was it purely positive in nature, or were there negative aspects to it? I'm thinking primarily in relation to recent documentaries in the past few years that brought up terms like that were used at the time, like lack of moral fiber. How do you view that term, and how do you view the type of training? Like I said earlier, was it positive, or was there a lot of negative aspects to it also?
I wouldn't say there were negative aspects to the training. I agree with the psychological readings that I have done that express the view that the lack of moral fiber treatment of the Royal Air Force, LMF, was a far too heartless, inhuman method, and is quite strong on that point. You realize that being categorized as LMF meant that you went through a procedure where your buttons were cut off in a parade, your rings were stripped, you were put into what was known as the glass house, you were assigned menial chores such as cleaning latrines. I have even heard recently that some of the LMF individuals were put working in the coal mines of Britain. But perhaps worst of all was the fact that one of those individuals had to go back home and to face their friends and family and so on and have this dishonorable attachment made to their name. I have a book called The Cream of the Crop, and I'd be happy to lend it to you if you wish.
Did you ever personally witness that type of treatment of aircrew because of LMF?
Not precisely. I'm going to put it in generic terms. I know of an air gunner who, after 4 or 5 trips, said, "That's it, I've had it." And he claimed to have back problems and went on sick parade and was in military hospital for quite some time and was ultimately returned to Canada. I did not ever hear that he was dishonorably discharged and with the LMF designation. My honest assessment is not that I agree with that kind of assessment, that he was as much a candidate for LMF as others who truly were.
So it seems that it wasn't quite as prevalent as some documentaries or some publication.
No. But it certainly did happen.
It did happen.
Yeah.
Just before I brought up that issue, you were talking about your own experience. You stated that you experienced nightmares. Did you notice any other differences in your personality, your relationships, especially after you came home back to Canada, where you might have perhaps benefited had some form of counseling or assistance been available? This may be too personal a question, I don't know.
Boy, that's a hard one to answer. I think that somehow I picked up a greater hardness of attitude that I didn't have prior to or as a youngster. Bear in mind, however, as you probably know, I took advantage of the educational benefits of the department's offer and took 4 years of civil engineering, for which I graduated with a BSc with distinction. Then I was asked by the dean if I would be interested in taking a postgraduate degree, a master's degree. And I said, well, I feel very honored you asking me that, but we ex-military guys are a little older. It's about time I got a job and put some bacon and eggs on the table. And he said, yeah, I can understand. And I thought that was the end of it. A few days later, he called me back to his office and he said, what would you think of spreading your master's studies over 2 years? And if you did that, we would be prepared to take you on the Faculty of Engineering, as I think they call it, sessional instructor or something of that nature. And for that, we'll be able to pay you. I said, well, that sounds like something that I can't turn down. Would you mind if I discussed it with my wife? We had 2 children then. And he said, of course not. And anyhow, I took 2 more years and got a Master of Science degree in structures and foundations. Of course, that was extremely beneficial. Maybe twisting the sentence around that you asked me about any harmful effects, it certainly gave me advantages. As a result, I formed a successful engineering company and enjoyed a successful professional life.
Yes, we've just taken another short break. We've come close to the conclusion now, but I'd like to ask you about a group that you belong to, the Royal Air Force's Escaping Society. Could you tell me about the group, please?
I'd be very happy to, Gene. The Royal Air Force's Escaping Society was formed originally in the UK, but there are branches in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa. I'd like to emphasize that the purpose or aims of the RAFES, as we call it by acronym, is not one of self-interest. It is formed to pay, repay a debt of honor that we feel we owe to the members of the underground resistance groups who laid their lives on their line and in many cases gave their lives and those of their family in order to save us. We call them helpers. And it's been our practice in Canada to bring over year by year maybe 5 or 6 helpers, give them a tour of a part of Canada, have them attend our annual general meeting. And at that time, they tell the story, and the airmen involved tell their story coincident with it. And they are also awarded a medallion, and we get a high-ranking Air Force officer or member of the government to be the key attender at the head table and to make the medallion presentation. We do this for them at our cost, to which we have all contributed. And naturally, the ranks on our side are now thinning. Regrettably, the same is happening with our helpers overseas, and the number that we can bring over each year has dwindled perhaps to one or two, and regrettably, foreseeably, we have to decide now what are we going to do. The expression has arisen, the last one here turns out the light.
Well, with that, I'd like to conclude this interview, and on behalf of the University of Victoria, its researchers, and also its partner, the Royal United Services Institute, I'd like to thank you for your cooperation.
Well, I'm most pleased to assist in any way I can. I'm sure it will be realized that at almost 82 years of age and re-events 60 years ago, there are many, many more things that could be said, but I think the salient features of my experiences have been covered. On the other hand, should in the oral preparation or the written preparation reveal gaps that you would like to fill, I would be more than happy to reconvene the interview sessions.
That's very much appreciated. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.